This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. With the presidential election still almost 15 months away, many of us are already getting tired of hearing from and about the candidates and the potential candidates for president. But with at least, at last count, 22 declared candidates, the rising popularity of Bernie Sanders, Hillary's emails, and the Trump of the Donald, for those of us who follow politics for a living, it is a truly wonderful time to be alive. Joining us this afternoon for a look at the latest in political news are two of those lucky individuals, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Oh, we are so lucky to be covering Donald Trump.
Are we?
We are so lucky.
Are we in the twilight zone?
You feel
zone
privileged?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, Howard and I have been covering politics for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think I can speak for Howard. I have never seen anything like this. Ever.
No, not quite like this. No, this stands apart.
Yeah, I just keep wondering if it's an alternative universe of some type that we
bizarre arrived world.
At. Bizarre world. Well, Ken, we await the trivia question with great anticipation. So
it's Donald Trump related, and that is, before Donald Trump declared his candidacy, who was the last person whose first attempt at public office was to run for president?
Okay. If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call at 513-419-7100. The first correct answer will win a fabulous political junkie button. And Ken, you know, when you look at the news coverage of the GOP presidential race, it's a lot of Trump with a smattering of some of the other candidates mixed in. What do you think all this focus on Trump is doing to the presidential race and the tone of the race?
Let me get to the tone in a second. But for what it's doing to the Republican Party, the original conventional wisdom was that it was good news for Jeb Bush, because if Donald Trump was taking the oxygen out of any other alternative to Bush, that was good for the putative front runner. He can raise his $100 gazillion and go on and on and see what happens. But Trump is talking about issues that, in my view, can only hurt the Republican Party in November. I mean, just, you know, it's one thing to talk about illegal immigration and securing the border. It's another thing to have toxic and obnoxious comments about a growing segment of the American public, a populace. And if anything, if there was a lesson coming out of 2012, was you ignore the Latino vote at your own peril. And not only is Trump seeming to not only ignore it, but to bait them. And I don't see the purpose of that.
Yeah. And the Republicans desperately, desperately need to get a big piece of that Latino vote.
Ken, I heard Marco Rubio say that Donald Trump is not going to be the GOP nominee because his message is not an optimistic one. I've heard other critics who say he's debasing political discourse in an unprecedented fashion.
Isn't that something that the worst they can say is that it doesn't rise the political dialogue? That's the worst. Well, that's the only thing you can say about Donald Trump.
One of the things I have noticed here is occasionally with some of these other candidates, they're almost trying to out-Trump Trump.
Yep.
Trump did this thing the other day about China and about the Chinese president coming next month for a state dinner, and that Obama should give him a Big Mac for dinner. And then Scott Walker jumps into it and says that, you know, he should disinvite the Chinese president and not have him here at all. And the people in Iowa went nuts. I mean, the establishment there, because they export a lot of goods to China.
Did you know today is National Burger Day?
Is that right?
So it is. It is National Burger Day, and so I can't wait to hear the latest whopper from Donald Trump. But it's true about Scott Walker. When Donald Trump questioned the 14th Amendment about birthrights, and then Scott Walker said, well, you know something? I'm not sure I'm in favor of that either. And Scott Walker, who once upon a time was supposed to be the leader, at least in the early polls, in Iowa, now he just seems so diminished because everything Trump seems to say, Scott Walker says, well, what about me? What about me? Yeah, me too, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Ken, why do you think that Trump has such staying power? What's making this happen? Is he striking the right nerve?
Well, he's striking a nerve that unfortunately this a nativist segment of the population just loves to hear. You know, they're fed up, they're disillusioned with government, they don't trust what the leaders of both parties say. And I'm not convinced this is a Republican crowd he's attracting. No. I keep hearing anecdotal evidence that some Obama voters are suddenly warming up to Trump because Obama was different. He was an outsider in 2008, and that didn't seem to work so well. So now the new outsider is Donald Trump. But it's just, it's poisonous, and he's feeding this anger about, you know, just kick him out. You know, take 11 million people here, undocumented immigrants, and just send them out. Just round them up and send them out. It sounds like from another era that I'd rather not draw comparisons to, but it just seems very chilling to me.
But it would take a whole lot of buses to do that.
Right. But, you agree with him or not, how practical is that whole idea?
But, you know, Ken, I'm convinced that in some of these polls anyway, that a lot of these people who are saying they're supporting Trump are not really Republican primary voters.
Yeah, you know, I think that's very true. And I mean, we don't know that for sure, but I agree with you. I kind of think these are not the kind of folks who will show up for 4 hours in Iowa or come up to the cold, you know, the polling booths in New Hampshire. But again, you know, Ross Perot also attracted a lot of previous non-voters who, and 19 million of them showed up in November of 1992. Who knows? Who knows, right?
And Ken, you have to ask, you know, what's going to happen to Trump's campaign when the number of candidates starts to get whittled down? Instead of facing more than a dozen people, he's only facing three or four people.
That's a good point. I mean, I was going to say that if he has 25% of the vote now with 16 candidates in the race, does he have 25% of the vote against Jeb Bush or Scott Walker or Marco Rubio? But at the same time, his numbers are increasing. Every time he says something incendiary, his numbers just keep increasing. And you could say, well, you know, the media are not doing their job. But yet every time I see the media asking questions, he doesn't answer them. He gives the same pat answers.
Or he throws them out of the room.
Or throws them out of the room.
What did you think of the whole thing with Jorge Ramos, was it?
What did
you think of that, Ken? Yeah.
I'm torn on that. First of all, I mean, I'm not a fan of I've never seen a press conference where a journalist stands up and say, I demand to be heard, and he's not called on. But having said that, I mean, he represents a huge international media point of view. And I'm not convinced that the Latino journalistic community is fair and balanced on Donald Trump, but it certainly should be respected. They certainly have a point of view needed to be said. And when you stand up and say, you know, when you kick him out of the room and say, go back to Univision, is that go back to Africa? I don't know. I mean, I'm just hearing things that just sound so wrong to me.
Right.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's see if anybody knows the answer to Ken's trivia question. Yes. Which, Ken, would you give that to us one more time?
And you remember the rules, right? The rules.
You know what? A guy makes a mistake one time, and you don't let him live it down the rest of his life.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying with Donald Trump. He makes one little mistake, and then we jump.
Everybody just jumps all over him.
I know. It's so unfair. Okay. Before Donald Trump declared his candidacy, who was the last person whose first attempt at public office was to run for president?
Okay. Well, let's give Debbie and Marymount a try. Debbie, what do you think the answer is?
Is it Ross Perot?
Ross Perot is a good guess. When he first ran for president in 1992, that was his first run for public office, but that is not the correct answer.
Okay, let's try Seydou, who's in downtown Cincinnati. What do you think the answer is?
I will go with the 2004 Democratic primaries with General Wesley Clark.
Wesley Clark is a better answer because it's more recent than Ross Perot. And when Wesley Clark ran in 2004, that was the first time he ran for office. But that is not the correct answer either.
Okay. Let's let Mike in Springfield take a try at this. Mike, what do you think the answer is?
I like Ike.
Well,
not bad.
Like
well, yeah, a lot like of people Tina, did, yes.
Yeah, I like Tina Turner too. The other one. No, I mean, but of course, Ike did run for the first office he ran for, was president.
Yeah.
And he was the last person who ran for the first office and was elected president.
Sure.
But that goes back a bit. It's more recent than Eisenhower.
David in Sharonville, give it a try. Hello, David.
My guess is Ralph Nader.
Well, Ralph Nader did run for president many times, but again, this is we're talking about somebody more recent than Ralph Nader.
Okay,
thanks for the try there, David. And Marlene.
What about Bill Bradley?
Well, no. Bill Bradley did run for president in 2000 against Al Gore in the Democratic primary. But before that, he was a two-term senator from New Jersey, first elected in 1978. So he was already a U.S. senator before he ran for president.
And thank you for the try there, Marlene. Boy, Ken stumped everybody so far.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Give that question one more time. We'll give out the phone number again and see if we can get another round of people to try this one.
I think I know.
So before
Don't
Donald
say it.
Trump.
Don't say it. You're getting a lot of trouble with Ken if you do.
I'm not going to say it.
You know, there are rules, Howard, because I could bring up things in your past.
I broke them last week and I just got grief.
You don't want to hear stuff on WVXU about your past, Howard, that I can easily break up.
I'm not going to provoke you,
because you're a loser and you're boring, and Latinos love me. Okay, sorry. Before Donald Trump declared his candidacy, who was the last person whose first attempt at public life was to run for president?
Okay, if you think you know the answer to that, 513-419-7100. And we will continue our political conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson join us this afternoon with a look at the latest political news. And you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Ken, I think we talked for 12 minutes about Donald Trump and nobody else. Can we talk about somebody else for a minute?
Wait, is anybody else running?
Yeah, well, no.
Here's
somebody who is not running, but maybe is thinking about it, and that's Joe Biden.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. I've seen all the reports. I know that he met last weekend with Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
He made an unscheduled visit to come back to Washington to meet with her. He's talking to his friends, his family, donors about possibly running. There are a lot of folks in South Carolina. I don't know about a lot, but there are a bunch of folks in South Carolina who are seriously ready to pick up the ball as soon as Joe Biden gives them an indication that he will run. Personally, I'm not convinced he does run.
Yeah.
Two, I don't know if it's too late. I mean, this is only August, but if you look at the millions of dollars that Hillary Clinton has raised, the staff, the organization, the endorsements she has in the Senate, which it seems to be overwhelming, and then you have, if there's an alternative to Hillary Clinton, it seems to be not Martin O'Malley, not Jim Webb, but Bernie Sanders, who at least in some polls in New Hampshire— is doing very, very well, if not even leading in these, some of these early polls, again, with 5 months to go, but it seems to be doing very well. There are questions about Bernie Sanders' sustainability. I mean, how does he do with black votes? I mean, I know that he's gotten the votes of every black in Vermont, which is nine people. But I mean, so, but of course, there's, you know, anyway. But the thing is, what is Joe Biden's argument other than the fact that Democrats are nervous about Hillary Clinton and her vulnerabilities?
Yeah, the one thing that, you know, I saw some reports, though, that, you know, the Obama money people were, you know, starting to gear up a little bit for a possible Biden run. And they kind of like the idea of Biden and Elizabeth Warren. But and Hillary's tanking in the polls, but...
Is she, though?
Like, yeah, well, that's my next point. I mean, tanking compared to what?
That's a great question, Ken. You always hear she's tanking in the polls, but... Yeah.
Compared to what?
Right.
You know, she's still way ahead of Bernie Sanders or Martin O'Malley or Lincoln Chafee or anybody else you can name.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, the real numbers I think we should be looking at is the questions about her trustworthiness, her honesty, and those numbers are give the Democrats pause if you look at those numbers in the polls. But if you look at what Democrat would you like for president right now, and again, 5 minutes before 5 months before Iowa and New Hampshire, but right now, Hillary Clinton has a huge lead in Iowa, not so much of a lead in New Hampshire, and it seems to be enormous in other states as well. But again, every time she says something about, I mean, for her to say, make a joke about, I signed up for Snapchat because these messages disappear on their own, get erased on their own. Right. Is that supposed to be funny?
Was not a very good attempt.
That was a big mistake on her part. I mean, basically, she's pointing at what we're all saying about her, is that she's just
not
so
trustworthy.
Not trustworthy and not honest. And this is her own making. This is not the... anybody who has the words FBI next to her name in every newspaper headline in the country, that's not something to make jokes about, I don't think.
And I have no idea who's going to come out of this GOP mess, you know, with this nomination. But... If the Democratic candidate is Hillary Clinton and there are a majority of people who say we don't trust her, that is going to be a very, very big problem in a general election.
That's true. But, of course, if it's Jeb Bush, look at Bush's numbers among Republicans. Or any Republican. I mean, it's just remarkable. If there were only such a thing as we always have this pipe dream of a third party candidate who's going to rescue us, the Colin Powell, the Michael Bloombergs of the world, which of course doesn't happen. The last time we had a serious third party candidate, it was Ross Perot, and he was from Neptune, so he's ineligible to become president.
Is that where he was from, Ken?
Yeah, Neptune. Yeah, a small town.
One of the moons of Pluto.
Yeah, right.
Wasn't there a Quinnipiac poll though that just came out recently that showed Joe Biden was in a pretty good position, that he stacked up better against GOP candidates than Hillary Clinton did?
Certainly on the negative, there's far less negativity about Joe Biden than there was about Hillary Clinton. You know, it's interesting. We keep referring to, I keep thinking about the two times that Joe Biden has run for president in the past, in 1987, where his campaign imploded because of plagiarism and exaggerating his academic credentials. And then in 2008, he finished with 1% in the Iowa caucuses. He has all these gaffes. But there's a certain... Somehow he's gone from crazy Joe, crazy Uncle Joe, to somebody who our heart goes out to him. The unmistakable, unimaginable tragedies he's endured. But is he a better candidate? Maybe he is. I just don't know if he does it. But of course, you know, as a journalist, you always want to see more candidates run and see what happens. But I don't know if he does it.
But Bernie Sanders, I mean, you see the... He hits a ceiling, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, I hit the ceiling every time I hear Donald Trump's voice, but my head is killing me. But does he hit his? Yes, he does. But how do you explain 20, 25,000 people showing up at rallies?
Right.
And And again, these are, you know, this is not Iowa, New Hampshire. Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, right, which we all know are communist countries. So maybe that's part of it, or socialist country.
Cincinnati, Ohio, is a place where I drove into work this morning behind a Volkswagen Jetta with a Bernie for President bumper sticker on the back of it, and a dog hanging out the passenger side window.
Was it Mitt Romney's dog?
Yeah. No, that would have been on the roof.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Hey, Ken, because I'm getting old, my memory is not like it used to be. Give us the question again. We've got a bunch of people lined up, and we'll see if anybody can get this.
Okay.
Oh, your memory is gone. Okay, it's Ken Rudin. My name is
How do you
Ken.
Spell that?
Yeah, right there. What was your question again? I'm sorry, the trivia question?
Yeah.
He's known as the political junkie.
Junkie? Okay, before Donald Trump declared his candidacy, who was the last person whose first attempt at public office was to run for president?
Okay, let's let Liz and Dayton have a shot at that. Liz, what do you think?
I would say Carly Fiorina, the HP president.
Well, Carly Fiorina was the Republican nominee for the Senate in California in 2010. She ran against Barbara Boxer and got clobbered. So she ran. The first time she ran for office was for the Senate in California.
Mark in Fairfax, what do you think the answer is?
Lyndon LaRouche.
Wow.
Well, sure. Lyndon LaRouche, he did run for president, but the first time he ran for president, I think, was in 1992, if not 88. No, I'm sorry. He may have run in 76 was the first.
Yeah, I think it was 76 in 70, was,
exactly, right. So the first time he did run for office was for president, but he's not the most recent.
Okay. Drew and Madeira, what do you think?
I think it's Herman Cain.
Herman Cain is a good guess, except he ran for the Senate in Georgia prior to running for president in 2008. I think it was a 2002 Republican primary, lost the Republican runoff, but he ran for the Senate in Georgia.
Okay, and let's see here. Tim in Green Township, what do you think the answer is?
I'll go with Dr. Ben Carson.
That is the correct answer, because Donald Trump...
Very good. Very
do that
good.
Many people do that many people listen to the show? Anyway,
yes, they're Donald here in the studio. Wasn't it?
Donald Trump announced on June 16th. Ben Carson announced on May 4th. So before Donald Trump, the last person to do that was Ben Carson a month before.
That was a trick.
That was a trick question.
That was a trick question.
I don't think so.
See, you can chastise me. I would have said Steve Forbes, but.
Tim, that was a good one. Yeah,
that was a good question, Ken. Tim, very good. And stay on the line. Our producer will get your address where he can send your prize to. Thanks, Tim. So, you know, speaking of Ben Carson, did you happen to catch his comments the other day about, hey, I might be Trump's running mate, or he could be my running mate? Did you catch that by chance, Ken?
No, I stopped doing drugs a long time ago. Did he really say that?
He opened the door to that. Yeah. He says I'd be Trump's running mate, or you know, if I happen to be the one who's on top, then Trump could be my running mate. That's that.
Whoa. Did we talk about this last time? I mean, remember in the last debate, in his closing statement, he talked about he was the only candidate on the stage who separated conjoined twins.
Yes, we did. That comment was a great comment. Right.
Well, it's not, because I think we need candidates who could bring people together. I'm sorry. Was the second delay working on that joke?
One more. Yeah,
I didn't hit the button in time.
One more Trump thing. Do you actually see him as a possible third party or independent candidate?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, if the Republican Party,
the Republicans are dead, then.
Well, I think they're dead. They may be dead either way. But you know something? If he runs a third party, I could see him finishing second.
Yeah.
I could see the people who just say a pox on both of your houses, and maybe Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democrat is finishing first. I could see him finishing second, the Republicans in third place, which, of course, the last time that happened, ladies and gentlemen.
William Howard Taft.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right.
1912.
Yeah.
Woodrow Wilson won. Teddy Roosevelt, the third party, finished second. And President William Howard Taft
was at the bottom.
finished third. I went to William Howard Taft High School in the Bronx, and I went there when Taft was still president. That's how long it's been since I've been.
Howard and I won't tell you how long it's been. Ken,
Howard went to Frank Lauschy High School.
Well, I went to a grade school named after Grover Cleveland.
Did you?
I went to a high school that no longer exists. At least not in the form it used to be.
But that is a serious possibility. And I mean,
absolutely,
he could do that.
Why would he take himself out of the limelight? He's incapable of that.
And he's got the money to do it.
Since we're all from Bizarro World, Ken, what about Bernie Sanders running as an independent?
Well, that's a good question because his career is an independent. But I don't think he would do that. I mean, basically, you do that if you're just really so unhappy with the Democratic nominee. I don't think he has a major problem with Hillary Clinton or assuming she's a nominee. I mean, I think he'd like her to be more progressive. She's taken more progressive positions during the campaign. She is talking more and more about income inequality. I don't think Bernie is running against Hillary Clinton as much as he's trying to get his point of view across. And that's his candidacy. If he were running against Hillary Clinton, he would be talking about the FBI things and the Benghazis and the email controversy and all that stuff, and he's not doing that at all.
I think Bernie Sanders, I don't believe he wants to see a Republican in the White House or certainly Donald Trump.
No, he does. Let me think for a second. No, he does not want to see that. Could I just say and interrupt for one quick second?
You sure? Sure. Of course, you always do.
I think of myself, I really do think of myself as a journalist, and I really think of myself as somebody who, for all the decades I've been doing this, I mean, I really believe in politics. I love politics. I am not a partisan. But I find myself saying things about a presidential candidate like Donald Trump that I've never said about any other candidate before. I find myself losing objectivity, and it disappoints me about myself that I'm doing that, but I just rack my brain saying, how is he doing this, and what's going on with the system, and what's going on with the political class in this country? So I find myself saying things and thinking things that I've never done about any candidate, left or right, Democrat or Republican in my life.
Well, I mean, I think you've probably got a whole lot of company in that boat in the world of political journalists.
It's interesting what you're saying. I mean, it's almost like it's reverse psychology, and Trump is a master marketer. So you kind of wonder if this is all strategic and purposeful to be doing this.
You mean on his part?
Yeah.
If you watch his press conference, and if you watch the one on Tuesday where Jorge Ramos was thrown out and then allowed back in. All he talks about was how much everybody loves him and how he's doing great in the polls and I won the debate and everybody else is an idiot and everybody loves me. And I'm saying, with somebody with all this power, with all this money, with all this opportunity to do something and to just think about all the adulation he gets and that's all he seems to think about. I mean, look, there are egotists who run for president and some people think that you have to be an egotist to run for president, but I've never seen it in such a frightening way. I just can't make heads or tails of it.
We've been sucked back into talking about Donald Trump.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. You know what? How come we're not talking about George Pataki?
Yeah. Oh, okay. He's still in the race.
Who is?
I just made up that name.
Actually, it was Virginia.
Yeah, right. It was Virginia's governor I brought up, and
Jim Gilmore. Yeah. Right, Jim Gilmore.
Ken, who do you think is going to be the first to drop out on the Republican side?
Well, I do have a contest on my website exactly asking that question. Most of the answers seem to be George Pataki, and I was shocked about that because I didn't know he was still running. But there are a lot of questions. I mean, whatever happened to Chris Christie? Nobody's talking about Chris Christie anymore. Whatever happened to Rand Paul, who was going to take the Ron Paul supporters and move this anti-government surveillance movement? But nobody's talking about him either.
Rand Paul almost seems to have hit a wall.
Yeah, he's had a rough stretch. He's had a very rough stretch as far as the news coming out for him. So
And the news is not all good. His the head of his super PAC was just indicted, not on something to do with Rand Paul, but you don't want to see the word indictment next to your name on a newspaper headline.
And really, to a certain extent, I think Trump has hurt him too, kind of taken away some of those people that were just angry.
You know who seems to have come out of, I mean, I'm not saying this because we're on your station, but Kasich, more and more Republicans are talking about John Kasich than I would have thought a month ago, the last time we were on the show. And what's interesting about that is that if you think of the big criticisms that many conservatives have about Jeb Bush, support for Common Core education standards, support for a pathway to immigration for people here illegally, well, that's John Kasich's positions as well.
Yep.
And yet he doesn't seem to be paying that kind of price.
He's not paying the price. And then something happens like happened a little while back where the very conservative governor of Alabama comes out and endorses Kasich
for president. Robert Bentley. Right.
And, you know, you look at that SEC primary that's on March 1st, the southern states, maybe a guy like Kasich could compete in a place like that. He's also got Charles Barkley, by the way, of NBA fame.
He has the mound round of rebound on his
that's
side
right,
now?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you hear who endorsed?
Two Alabamans, Bentley and Barkley.
Yeah.
Did you hear who endorsed Donald Trump yesterday? I'm not making this up. David Duke.
Oh, yes. Oh, I did see that, yes.
The former Klansman. Yes. And right. I mean, this says, I'm not blaming Donald Trump for David Duke's decision, but there's a message there somewhere.
Yes.
Ken, does it surprise you how well, I mean, Kasich entered the race pretty late. Does it surprise you how well he's been able to do?
Well, first I thought he was making a mistake by entering so late because obviously you needed to do well in the polls to make it into the debate. And then I'm thinking maybe he was crazy like a fox that he deliberately got into the race late to have a little bit of momentum because everybody gets a boost when you announce, and it boosted him in the polls to get into the top 10. But there's something about, you know, we always talk about him being the compassionate conservative in the 2016 race, but there's something about what he talks about his heart and about we can't leave these people behind, you know, the less fortunate and the mentally ill and things like that. But that sounds wonderful, and it sounds very endearing and heart-rending, and that's great for a general election audience, but does that play in Iowa? Does it play in South Carolina? I don't know.
Well, he's banking on the fact that it's going to play in New Hampshire.
Right, right.
And that's where he's putting his marbles. Next week will be his 13th visit to New Hampshire. And even before he announced formally that a New Day for America, the 527 group, had been spending a whole lot of money on Kasich TV ads in New Hampshire.
Well, you know, Hillary was in a Cleveland speech. She took a swipe at Kasich on abortion policy, so she's definitely paying attention to him. She takes him seriously.
Yeah, right. I mean, people are starting to take the guy seriously. I mean, he said something the other day at an education forum in New Hampshire where he said, like, if I were king of America, I would shut down all teachers' lounges because that's where they all go to whine. And you know, he got a lot of, you know, blowback from the, you know, the teachers' unions, obviously, and that sort of thing. But it was kind of one of those John Kasich off the leash moments, you know, where he had said, you know, and his people said, look, nobody was taking him seriously. That was a metaphor, you know.
Well, plus the fact getting a tongue lashing from the teachers' union in a Republican primary is not the worst thing either.
Yeah, that's right. And a Republican primary, who cares what the teachers' unions think?
Well, you know, and then he has this statement that's been out there, I think, that catches a lot of people's attention where he says, can't remember if his mother or his grandmother said it's a sin not to help people who are in need, but it's an equal sin not to help people get on their feet if they can be on their own feet.
Right. Yeah, and he also says that, you know, when you meet St. Peter at the Golden Gate, are you going to be able to tell him that you did something to help those less fortunate than you?
Right.
We will have more coming up with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk to Terry in Covington. Hi, Terry.
Hello, gentlemen. I'll cut right to the chase. I am what many progressive Democrats consider a complete and total enigma. I am black, and I am, God forbid, a Republican. And while I think that Carlson would be a good choice, and I think Kasich may have some legs, the one person that I'm really rooting for is the one woman in the Republican, in that group of Republicans, Carly Fiorina. I like this woman. I think she's bright. She's intelligent. It's really, I find it very disappointing and frustrating that she's still low in the numbers. Well, I just wanted to know what you guys think. How far is this lady going to go? I know she's going to be in the top tier of debate.
But how far is she going to go? That's a good question, Terry.
Yeah, how far is she going to go?
Okay. Ken, what do you think?
Well, I think she handled herself very admirably in the kids debate, you know, 3 weeks ago on the Fox. She was in the first seven. She didn't make it to the final 10. Her numbers have definitely jumped up since then. There's anecdotal evidence that she's also raised a lot of money based on her performance, because she's not only attacking Hillary Clinton, but she's attacking Donald Trump and not backing down from it. The thing is, to get into the top 10 debate next month in Simi Valley, CNN is taking all the polls, not only the more recent polls, but a conglomerate of all the polls from the last 2 months. So that could weigh her down, and I'm not sure. Yeah. There's no guarantee that she gets in. But I think she also has a little bit of a Mitt Romney problem, in the sense that, remember, before she ran for the Senate in California in 2010, she was the CEO at Hewlett-Packard, and under her leadership, I mean, we blame her or we don't blame her. I mean, if you're, you know, just the way the Democrats blame Mitt Romney for everything at Bain Capital, but under her leadership, tens of thousands of people were fired from Hewlett-Packard. The stock tanked, and she was fired, and it was an ugly firing. So if she's going to run for president touting her business acumen, you know that her opponents are going to throw back her tenure at Hewlett-Packard, and that could be a problem.
Yeah, I keep hearing her name thrown about, though, as somebody who's positioning herself to be a vice presidential candidate.
Well, that's what she does is exactly what a vice president does. If you think of Richard Nixon in 52 and Bob Dole in 76 and Agnew in 68, the attack dog. And I don't mean to, I mean, that basically she says, well, look, you know, you're not going to accuse me of waging a war on women, on Hillary Clinton, because I happen to be one of those women. I mean, she does have effective attack lines against Hillary Clinton. And the response to that among Republicans audiences is very positive.
Yeah, I mean, I think she'd make a great running mate for somebody just for exactly that reason. She could go after Hillary Clinton and go after her hard and, not get any blowback about it.
You know, it's funny you say that, Ken, because every time I see her, and I'm no political expert, I get that same feeling that she is vice presidential in tone and attitude. So,
I think Ken's right. I mean, this Hewlett-Packard thing is going to dog her for some time. Now, if she could break through into the top tier of candidates in these national debates, then you might see, some movement. But it's going to be tough.
Now,
we're ignoring the real question. Yeah. Why is Terry a black Republican? I mean, is that allowed in this country?
I hope so.
Well, yes. Okay.
Last I heard it was.
Yeah.
Okay,
better be.
Terry, I was kidding. Terry, I'm kidding.
He's gone, but
he's
still
listening. Black Republican was the answer to your question.
Right, Ben Carson, right.
What about the theory, Ken, that Joe Biden runs with Elizabeth Warren as VP and says he's going to be a one-term president so that Warren will get her shot?
Well, I mean, Joe Biden is 72. Elizabeth Warren is 66 or 67. I would suspect that Joe Biden would be a one-term president. And that sounds like an ageism answer because, look, Joe Biden is very energetic and sharp. But when you try to think of new leadership in the country, somehow, I don't know. There's something about Joe Biden that I've made fun of for years. But suddenly, as I said, my heart just it opens up for Joe Biden, and I'd love to get him. Look, he's been a very 36 years in the Senate, a very effective vice president. Remember, it was Joe Biden who said the ban on same-sex marriage is just, you know, crazy. He jumped the gun on anybody in the administration. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, he was the first. So he's done a lot of, while he says a lot of crazy things, he's done a lot of important things. And I just want him to have, you know, the kind of capstone to his career that he deserves and wants. But I just don't see it. I don't know. And why would, and basically why would, well, of course, running for vice president is different. But why would Elizabeth Warren not prefer Hillary Clinton or her ideological soulmate in Bernie Sanders? Mm-hmm. Why would she align herself with Joe Biden? I just don't see it.
Hmm. 513-419-7100, if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Brandon in Mason. Hi, Brandon.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Go right ahead.
I'm gonna comment. We're talking about the momentum and how everyone seems to be either sick of the summer Trump or it's going to happen sometime soon. And I just wanted to make a comment on Rubio. We haven't really talked about him a lot, but there's an article in Politico talking with his campaign manager, and they were talking about how he's exactly where he wants to be right now in the polls. For a, it's calculated because he's planning a bump in the winter, like December and January, because that's when people are going to be tired of Trump. And I just think his campaign's really calculating for the long run.
Ken, what do you think?
Well, you know something? I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what the longevity of Donald Trump is. I don't know if people will get tired of him or not. I think it's a fool's errand to predict what's going to happen. But I kind of think, do not take your eyes off of Marco Rubio. I think I think it was a New York Times columnist the other day who said the most dangerous ticket for the Republican Party would be Kasich Rubio, which I thought was interesting.
Right.
But Marco Rubio is smart. He's young. He's energetic. He's a new. I mean, when you look at, you know, when you look at what the Democrats are offering, this is, it's not a fountain of youth on the Democratic side. And Marco Rubio is just young and energetic. And I mean, he reminds a lot of people of, for better or worse, of what Barack Obama represented in 2008.
So, what was the Times criticism of a Kasich Rubio ticket?
There was none.
I misunderstood then.
When I said dangerous, I meant dangerous for the Democrats.
Oh, dangerous for the Democrats. Okay.
I'm sorry.
And it could be a Rubio. It could be a Rubio Kasich ticket, or it could be a Kasich Rubio ticket. Doesn't matter. You know, it would mean Florida and Ohio.
Well, I mean, that's like
maybe.
Saying,
maybe. I'm not saying necessarily, but it would give them a good shot.
It would give them a good shot. Absolutely.
In two swing states.
You know, it's funny. I interviewed recently the campaign manager for John Kerry's campaign in 2004, and he said, "You know something? We should have picked John Glenn. We shouldn't have picked John Edwards. Mm-hmm. We should have picked John Glenn, and that would have given us Ohio." And I mean, I keep saying, "And not that we had no chance in the South. That was a big mistake." So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So who knows? Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, I do know that when Bush picked Cheney, it got Wyoming, and that was big. That was big.
Yes.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Lou in Dayton. Hi, Lou.
Hi. I'd like to ask Ken and Howard two questions. Was Megyn Kelly's question concerning women to Donald Trump improper? And number two, any chance Al Gore could get into the race?
Okay. Thanks, Lou. Okay. Gentlemen.
Well, okay, I'll start. Well, one, I thought her question was exactly right on. I mean, it was not an attack.
Yeah.
How could you, if this guy has a history of inflammatory statements about women, and he's called women in the past all these names, how could you not ask him that question? And his answer was, I don't believe in political correctness. So, in other words, it's okay to call women dogs and pigs and slobs because I don't believe in political correctness? How does this go on?
There was absolutely nothing wrong with what she asked him.
Well,
it was entirely proper.
She's a tough cookie, too.
as Ken says, given what Donald Trump has been saying in public.
She's a tough lady, too. I mean, she's not the type of person you want to pick a fight with. I mean, you watch her. She's pretty dogged in her questioning.
And as far as Al Gore's concerned, I just kind of think that train has already left the station. It's too late for that. He doesn't seem at all interested in it.
I saw that mention. I saw them talking about maybe John Kerry, maybe Al Gore.
Yeah,
I guess we're so desperate. I mean, the fact is we know that Herman Cain was a front runner 4 years ago. That shows how desperate we were.
He was.
But it's not happening. It's not happening. And he has no interest in doing that. I mean, Al Gore has no interest in – I know he was deeply hurt by what happened in 2000. Right. He doesn't want to relive that.
He's one of those guys – I mean, you know, he must wake up every morning saying, man, I should have been president. I was elected president.
Howard, you do the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
You do the same thing every morning.
Well, I've been doing that since like fifth grade, Ken.
We missed you last time.
That's over 20 years. That's over 20 years, Howard.
It is. Yeah. Well, 25 maybe. I don't know.
Now, the Democrats, let's see, they're going to have their debates. What is it, October they're going to start in Nevada?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
How much would you say that Hillary has riding on those debates?
Isn't it interesting that it's coming 2 months? First of all, the Democrats are not happy that the way, first of all, it's coming late in the process. There were only six debates. The Iowa one is coming a month and a half before the Iowa caucuses. The New Hampshire debate is coming the weekend before Christmas. Martin O'Malley and the other Democrats are saying this game is rigged for Hillary Clinton. But still, if you have a Megyn Kelly questioner on the asking Hillary Clinton the kind of questions that Megyn Kelly did to make Donald the one that kind of made Donald Trump squirm, then the inevitability of Hillary Clinton gets put into question again.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's got obviously has more to lose than anybody else. Everybody else has nothing to lose.
Ken, you got any the next GOP debate? When's that coming up?
September 13th in Simi Valley.
Not long. Well, you got any
September 16th? Yeah.
You got any feel for how that whole thing's going to pan out?
Well, it's a CNN crowd. I mean, I don't think that that just like Nixon went to China. You know that the Fox News guys really went after the Republican field. I don't expect the questions to be as aggressive, but I think. I mean, I don't know how do you predict anything? But, 24 million people watched the first one. That's almost as many people listening to the show today. I kind of think that you're going to have a huge turnout again and seeing what happens if Donald Trump has learned any lessons in the time after the first debate.
Yeah, it was really amazing, the audience that Fox debate drew, and I think that's going to be the case for all of these.
Yeah.
Well, going back to Trump again, that's one of the things that people say that he did was to generate a lot of interest in this political process, and despite what you might think of him, he is generating, I think, more interest than I've seen in a political race in a long time.
Good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think, how does this compare to races in the past? Have we ever had anything quite like this, Ken, that you can remember?
About a month ago, I was comparing him to Ross Perot and the fact that he's very rich and he says what he wants, but Ross Perot, I mean, but this is completely different because he says there is no filter. There is no, and what he says makes no sense. There's no, I mean, not that we need to be ideologically pure, but he'll say one thing about one thing, a left-wing kind of announcement, and then he'll come up with a conservative position. But the fact that it's insults and anger and bombast and ego.
Ross Perot had charts, okay? I mean, he had charts. He could make his case, whether you agreed with it or not. It wasn't just a stream of consciousness kind of a thing that Trump seems to be doing.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. And I think one word that's coming to mind right now is dangerous because he's baiting people. I've never seen a candidate. I mean, you could say maybe George Wallace in a sense, but this seems just deliberately baiting and insulting and ridiculing people, and he feeds off it.
Large groups of people.
Yes.
But you're right. There are a lot of people out there who support him. They see something of value that he has to offer. So, you know, this is not. I don't think you underestimate him. Ken, you think he's?
Oh no.
You think he's got? He's going to be in this thing for the long term.
I do. I mean, again, I'm not going to predict it. I mean, everybody says, well, he'll probably fade by X day. Who knows? I mean, I don't see, you know, I mean, let's see what happens with the reaction to his kicking out Jorge Ramos, which got a lot of people, like, really upset. But is it any worse than things he said in the past? I don't think so. I just, he seems incapable of learning any lesson or any humility. God, listen to me. I'm supposed to be a journalist.
He's ruined you, Ken.
Yeah. What's happened to me?
You'll never be the same after this one, I can tell you.
Well, Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely.
Political Junkie.
Next time we'll talk more about Bobby Jindal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we forgot about Bobby.
That was on my list.
So many people to talk about. Political Junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Miami University Center for Community Engagement in Over the Rhine establishes collaborations between the university and community groups in the neighborhood. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll learn about the center and the opportunities it provides students and the community. And we'll hear what commentator and George Mason University economics professor Walter Williams has to say about the state of the country in his latest book, American Contempt for Liberty. That Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.